Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
In many ways, parts of South Africa, in fact, it's quite funny we say this right now, when something goes wrong, we look to not only our government services, but in fact, we look to create private security and private solutions to the problem. Of course, that has become very, very significant in the area of security. South Africa now has, in fact, one of the largest private security industries in the world. And increasingly, we are seeing situations where private security firms and the SAPS work together on perhaps investigations, intelligence gathering, arrests, and community safety. Joining us now is Mark van Jaarsveld. He is the CEO of Community Active Protection, better known as CAP, to help us understand what happened earlier this week and to talk about the growing collaboration between the police and private security in a modern South Africa. Mark van Jaarsveld, good morning. Thank you for joining us. I hope you're well and warm.
Good morning, Howard, and to you and the team and all the listeners. And thank God I'm good. A little bit cold, but other than that, all good. Hope same with you.
Yep. I mean, that's literally winter has one job. So it's hard to complain. So there was this incident this week, took place in Norwood. You put out a bit of a news flash. I don't want to overly focus on it, even though I think it clearly was a significant success in terms of the security, but and then we'll move on to talk about this collaboration and how CAP works with the police, etc. So tell us what happened here first.
So obviously, look, the case is sub judice, so I'm limited in terms of what I can share. But in essence, what occurred was roughly at about 8:45 on Wednesday evening, the 6th of May. Five suspects entered this butchery in Norwood that was still open, began a business robbery, and in the process ended up obviously stealing a whole lot of belongings, but also then kidnapped one of the employees of that business before fleeing. It was what we term a kidnapping for ransom. So there was a subsequent ransom demand that was made, which is different generally to other types of kidnappings that are in the main, you know,
express ones. Yeah.
But that ransom was made very shortly after the actual kidnapping, and our team got involved. And thankfully, throughout the evening and into the early hours of the morning, we're able to identify quite a lot of information, some which came through via informants that we've been able to cultivate over time, and others, you know, through the general investigative techniques that we apply, which resulted in us being able to identify them and arrest them yesterday morning. So there are two suspects still outstanding who we are pursuing, but three have been arrested and taken into custody by the police, and we'll be following that case very closely through the judicial system.
The kidnappings for ransom, as you said, is not something that's particularly common. Is that normally very specific to a group, to a person, to a community, to a family, or can these be random random in the same way as express kidnappings?
Yeah, so I mean, a ransom kidnapping, we're speaking in general terms.
Yes, of course.
There always is the potential for that one that may be different. But, you know, in general terms, ransom kidnappings generally are always based on information, either from a close family relative or from suspects who have access to people with knowledge within your environment. So typically, if you're trading cash, if you've received a big payout, anything that would generally result in you having access to cash puts you at risk, to then have that information leaked out into the criminal world. And obviously, within that space, you've got different types of threats. You've got, let's call it, more professional syndicates, that will do thorough collection and understanding of their target, and, you know, will be really, really sophisticated in terms of the way that they operate. And those kidnappings can then draw out for months, and in even some cases that we've worked on years. In other instances, it can be a very amateurish type of group that, you know, typically may do other forms of violent crime, but have now decided, based on the access to the information that they've been provided, decide, well, let's try and do this. And I think, you know, the group that we dealt with on Wednesday night was very much the latter. It was an amateurish group. They were not sophisticated at all in any way. And the important thing from our side is to, you know, whenever these cases happen, you have to have success. You have to obviously work very hard to prevent them. But our powers in that regard are a little bit limited. But I think the key for us then focuses to having a success that results in deterrent that you create in time. You know, so you obviously want suspects to understand that if they perpetrate an incident like this in a CAP community, it will result in them being arrested. You know, and through that process, you can create deterrence. So there's no resources that are spared in order to kind of investigate, follow up, and deal with these types of matters and to assist families through what is generally a very traumatic process, as you can imagine.
I can only imagine. Horrific. Talk to me about the work that you do together with the police, with our intelligence services, because there's little doubt that greater success comes from all of the parties working together. Is there an unease from the South African police services? Are they collaborative? What's their approach to private security?
I think you have different, you've got different views. You know, it's a big organization and they're different parties, and we're seeing some of these issues play out on a national level, you know, within the Madlanga Commission and all of these type of things. But in the main, you've got hardworking policemen and women who are trying to make a difference and joined the service for the right reasons, you know. And I think those people you will always find in the various levels, whether it's at station or provincial or national units, and they are desperate to have partners that see the world in the same way that they do to effect arrests and to bring about change to South Africans. So, you know, we've been able over the 20 years to identify those types of people who kind of also mirror what we're trying to achieve. And then we see ourselves very much as almost like a force multiplier, you know, or extending that individual who has the legal power to investigate and arrest and all of those types of things, really to just extend their capability by supporting them through either technology that they don't have access to but should, you know, or just the human, the muscle that you need in order to, you know, go and download footage and look at it across 50 houses and then analyze it. And so we're trying to support those types of people within law enforcement as much as we can so that they can then do more. And we're very lucky. We have tremendous relationships with the different spheres of crime intelligence, visible policing, you know, and in other specialized units. And that's been cultivated and harnessed to you know, kind of bring about the successes that we've seen in this most recent case and others.
Absolutely incredible. Well, well done to you. Well done to your team. And thank you for everything that you do for all of
us.
Thank you, Howard. That is Mark van Jaarsveld. He is the CEO of CAP, chatting to us about what happened earlier this week and the broader work that is done between CAP, between private security companies, as well as the South African police services.